Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hidden Blade by Pippa DaCosta, narrated by Paul Woodson. Chapter 1. Gods, they're a pain in my ass, I thought as my cell phone chirped in my pocket, alerting the four college kids inside the apartment that I was crouched on their balcony watching them summon gods knew what from the underworld. It had to be a god calling me. Too many millennia had given them the worst sense of timing. The kids spotted me through the glass and bolted, falling over their array of ritual paraphernalia. If they scattered out of the apartment, it'd make scaring the shit out of them a whole lot harder. I kicked the balcony door in, whipped my sawed-off shotgun free of its holster, and fired at their exit, peppering the door with lead. The kids yanked up short and whirled.
Oh, shit! Oh, shit! Oh, shit! We didn't know, man!
Hands up, they wailed in one long tirade.
We weren't doing anything. Don't shoot us.
On and on their whining went, and on my cell tinkled, vibrating against my leg. Ignoring it all, I came to a stop at the edge of the elaborate summoning circle. A candle had toppled over, spilling wax across a papyrus scroll. The little flame licked at the scroll's upturned edge, but didn't catch. Switching the shotgun to my left hand, I crouched, righted the candle, and flicked the papyrus around. I scanned the hieroglyphs scrawled from edge to edge. The penmanship was superb, more art than writing. Swirls and pen strokes danced beautifully, almost as though they were alive. Whoever had written this knew how to craft the ancient words in powerful and mostly forgotten ways. A sorcerer. A sinking sense of dread darkened my already somber mood.
It's him, one of the kids hissed. I told you he was following us. You didn't fucking listen, Jace.
Shut up, just shut up, Jace snarled back. And then to me he sniveled. We were just messing around. Puffing out a sigh, I pinched the papyrus by its edges. The spell work it contained was authentic. Kids these days. They had no fear and no clue. The spell nipped at my fingertips, trying to escape its bonds. I dangled it over the naked candle flame. A ripple of fire raced up the paper. Fire liked volatile spells, especially those sanctioned by the underworld.
He's gonna kill us, Jace whispered.
I snapped my gaze up. I could do worse than kill them. It had been a while since I'd indulged, but I could make an exception for spoiled rich kids with too much time on their hands, especially since that one, Jace, and I already had a chat some weeks ago when I'd found him buying canopic jars. He gulped loudly and made a brave attempt at staring back at me before dropping his eyes. Few could look me in the eye for long. Finally, my cell stopped its incessant ringing, and the quiet settled. Too quiet. New York didn't do quiet. I should have been hearing the endless whine of sirens or the bark of car horns. I'm too late. I straightened. What happened to kids screwing around with Ouija boards? This here, I flicked a hand at the well-crafted summoning circle. This will get you killed. It's just some ancient Egyptian stuff. My lips twitched dangerously close to a smile. Holstering the shotgun inside my coat, I reached behind my shoulder and curled my fingers around Alistair's grip. The sword slid free from its leather scabbard with a satisfying gasp. There was something to be said for a two-handed sword, particularly the kind etched with spellwork exactly like that found on the scroll I'd just burned. Alistair sang with magic. These kids wouldn't hear or feel it, but it wasn't meant for them. Strictly speaking, it wasn't meant for this world either. A little like me.
Shit, man, you can't fucking do this!
They all started up again, bleating like penned sheep. All but one. The quiet one hadn't said a word since I'd kicked in the door, and was doing a fantastic job of trying real hard to keep me from noticing him.
Come on, you're the nameless one, right? The coat, the sword?
Jace spluttered, hope gushing through his words.
You're supposed to be good.
I wasn't sure what surprised me more, the fact he'd heard of the Nameless One, or that these dumbass kids thought I was good. The Nameless One is an urban legend. Pointing the sword tip at the floor, I scanned the apartment. The door was 10 paces away, the balcony was closer. 2 possible exits, and I was in the middle, positioned exactly where I wanted to be. Besides, I drawled, if he was real, you really wouldn't want him saving you. Any hope of saving these kids had fled long before I arrived. The spell work, the papyrus, heavy magic came at a high price. My job now was to contain the fallout. My cell buzzed. Poison by Alice Cooper started playing from my pocket. Quiet Guy kicked the glass coffee table, sending jagged pieces of glass raining over me. I flung up an arm too late to stop the shards from biting into my cheek. It only took a second, but the distraction lasted long enough for the summoned demon residing in Quiet Guy to snatch up a blade of glass and plunge it into his pal's neck. Things got messy real fast after that. A hail of screams erupted. Blood sprayed in a wide arc as the kid dropped. The demon inside Quiet Guy let out a triumphant howl, and the 2 remaining kids did the only sensible thing. They bolted out the door. I lunged at the demon, Alistair aglow, but being free, probably for the first time in its long life, the demon wasn't about to let the sight of Alistair frighten it. Scuttling back, its movements broken and twitchy inside its human host, the demon clawed its way up the wall and onto the ceiling. Its human mouth split impossibly wide, and a long, whip-like black tongue lashed out. It expected me to fall back. Those tongues were barbed. Any sane person would have run out the door with the kids, but I snatched the tongue out of the air, flicked it around my wrist, and yanked. I wasn't any sane person. Technically, I wasn't a person. The demon heaved back, jerking me forward. Wrestling with a demon's tongue wasn't how I'd expected this evening to go. "Give up now," I started, but the tongue nodded back on itself, reeling me closer. "And I'll let you live." My boots slipped. Tighter and tighter, the tongue coiled up my forearm, bicep, and shoulder, until the demon had me dangling, my boot toes scuffing the floor. The demon chuckled, the sound of it like metal grinding against metal, an abhorrent, not-of-this-world sound that set my teeth on edge. "Lost your bite, Nameless One," it hissed around its tongue, outside my mind as well as burrowing the words deep inside my thoughts. "I know a girl like you." I tightened my dangling grip on Alistair. "All tongue." The demon had begun distorting its victim's body. The face was swollen and flushed purple, as though Quiet Guy had been run through a trash compactor. The eyes, so fragile, had been one of the first things to go. They had turned to mush and were dribbling from their sockets. Crimson flames danced inside the dark, hollow sockets, seemingly deeper than a human skull could account for, as if reaching right into the soul. The eyes really were the windows to the soul, and Quiet Guy's was no longer home. Soon there would be little left of the kid. Once that happened, the demon would become virtually unstoppable, and the no-bullshit New Yorkers would have more to worry about than the alligators in the sewers, like the type of problem that ate small children and used their bones to pave the way for more of its ilk. "Don't get me wrong," I pushed the words through my teeth. "There's a lot the right girl can do with her tongue, but my friend's is as sharp as a dagger and cuts like one, too. Join me, Soul Eater. You were powerful once. Could be again." I pretended to think about it while locking eyes with those glowing red coals. The deeper I looked, the deeper the creature's needs and desires clawed into my mind. There was no light in this one. Only poisonous, devouring darkness. "I don't do, demon." I heaved the sword around and thrust it upright, sinking it deep into the demon's gut. The demon screamed the way only otherworldly creatures could, as though the sword had cleaved its soul in 2. I drove Alistair right up to its damn hilt. A familiar spell pushed from my lips, which would have been the perfect end to this little dance had the demon's tongue not unraveled and dropped me like a stone. I fell, dragging Alistair down with me, and landed in a crouch. The demon scuttled along the ceiling, down the wall, and out the door, leaving a trail of bubbling blood behind it. I spat a curse and dashed after it, my ringtone still belting out Alice Cooper and how his girl's lips were venomous poison. Chapter 2. Body number 2 lay sprawled in the stairwell, neck broken. I stepped over the corpse and jogged up the stairs, following the splatters of blood toward the roof. The demon would eventually kill the third kid, too. They always killed their summoners, the people who potentially had power over them. Shoving through a door, the stairwell spat me out into a biting winter wind. Snow swirled and padded against my face, softening the sounds of New York's usual din of traffic. Alistair in hand, hieroglyphs glowing pale green along her blade, I stepped into a few inches of snow cover and bounced my gaze around the rooftop's clutter. Storage boxes, an elevator motor enclosure, some other jagged shapes silhouetted against the glistening skyline, but no obvious demons. Beyond the roof, a high-rise loomed, its windows aglow. With the gunshot and the bodies, someone would call the cops, and soon. I had to get this done fast, before the demon sprouted wings. "I've reconsidered," I called out, following the trail of blood. My boots crunched in the snow, so there was no use in trying to move quietly. "You and me? I can make that work." The grinding laughter returned, but the wind gathered it up and tossed it around the rooftop.
"You are weak," says the demon with a hole in its gut, I muttered.
"You're going to die here, you must know that."
The demon could shift its shape and escape. Given enough time, it could hole up somewhere and lick its wounds. I couldn't let that happen. A demon loose in a city like New York would be a public relations nightmare. Naturally, it would be my fault. Most screw-ups were, if you asked the gods.
"You are not free to make a deal, nameless one."
"How's that?"
I inched up against the elevator enclosure and eyed the trail of blood leading out of sight around the corner.
"Your soul is owned by another."
The words tumbled through the air, but their source was close.
"I tasted him on you."
I winced. That truth cut too close to the bone for comfort. If word got out I was Ozzy's bitch, nobody would hire me. Shit, nobody would come within 10 feet of me. If the demon didn't have to die before, it did now. Enough talk. Talking with demons and listening to them was a surefire way of getting your mind devoured. This one had spent long enough probing my thoughts to pick up on my fears. They were good at that, planting seeds that would later grow into toxic doubts, until you fancied yourself a long walk off a short balcony. I hadn't dealt with a demon of this caliber in a while. Clearly I was rusty.
"Slippery things, souls."
I lifted Alistair and wrapped both hands around her handle, letting the sword pull on my magical reserves. "They're surprisingly easy to lose, and damn difficult to get back." I lunged around the corner and got a faceful of contorted demon chest. Alistair plunged through cleanly, slicing deeper than the metal alone would have allowed for, and sank into that fetid thing inside, its soul. A flicker snagged at my resolve, a twitch from my past of how good it would be to drink its soul down. It had been a long time, but this was Alistair's moment to shine, not mine. A soul that black, I didn't need the weight. The demon let out its ear-piercing screech. Its claws raked at my sword arm to cut off the source of its agony, but its red-eyed glow was fading as Alistair fed. The sword sang in my grip until the deed was done, and the demon collapsed into a pile of loose skin and putrid flesh. The afterbuzz tapped at the part of my mind that went to deeper, darker things every time Alistair got her kick and I didn't. The what-ifs, and just a little bits. With a growl, I staggered back, grateful the snow was swirling faster now and covering up the grisly evidence. Poison blared again from my pocket.
For Sekhmet's sake!
I wiped Alistair clean on my duster coat and drove her home inside her sheath, snug between my shoulder blades. Then I snatched the cell from my pocket.
Shu, by the gods, this had better be good, or I will come back there and shove your little statue of Ra up your...
Ace! Gods be damned, I'd worked with Shukra long enough to recognize that arctic tone in her voice.
That's my name, Peaches, don't wear it out.
Sirens wailed nearby. Too nearby. I strode to the edge of the roof and didn't need to look far to see the blue and white lights bathing the walls of the opposite building. It was too late to clean up the mess.
There's a goddess in your office. I suggest you don't make her wait.
The line went dead. A goddess in my office? That didn't narrow it down. There were more goddesses topside than you could shake a crook and flail at. Time to make a quick exit and leave the cops with more questions than they had any hope of answering. I tucked my cell away. I broke into a jog, the rooftop's edge approaching fast. I picked up speed, wondered too late if the gap between the buildings might be wider than I'd guesstimated, and leaped into the dark. Ignoring gods didn't make them go away. I'd tried. But that didn't mean I couldn't eke out some pleasure by making the bitch wait. I was on my way to my office, but I just happened to drop by Tony's bar and order a few shots first. Antonio was more than eager to oblige, and I figured I owed it to Tony to prop the bar up like I did most nights after a job, especially when the job flirted with the kind of illicit desires that had gotten me thrown out of the underworld, or Duat, to give the place its proper name. Tony drifted over, saluting me with the bottle of whatever he'd been serving me, something syrupy and potent. I placed my hand over the glass and shook my head. The idea was to arrive late, not drunk, although the thought of seeing the look on Shu's face did appeal to me. She wasn't immune to angry gods quite like I was. A minor god had once gotten the wrong idea about Shu and me and figured he could get to me by hurting her. I didn't answer the ransom. And as soon as Shu got free, she ripped his insides out via his throat. Happy days!
Ace, right?
A sweet voice asked, wrenching me out of my thoughts.
Hi, I'm Rosie. I work right across the street.
I looked at her and then at Antonio, who shrugged and left to tend to the rest of his flock, and finally at the door, like I might be able to see the place she'd mentioned through it.
The accountants?
Yeah.
She beamed, tucked her short blonde hair behind her ear, and leaned against the bar.
I've seen you around a few times, and...
She was talking, and I probably should have been listening, but my mind was still going over that tick, that little hook, that had dug itself in right when the demon had died. That little voice that said the demon's soul should have been mine. That voice was almost as old as I was. I thought I'd kicked it to the curb long ago. Rosie's smooth hand touched my arm, startling me back into the bar. She smiled like she was waiting for me to say something. I had no idea what. She was looking for company, but if she knew what I was, she'd run screaming. I tossed a few dollars on the bar and slipped off my stool. I gotta get to work. Sinking my hands into my jacket pockets, my fingers brushed a familiar gold band. I slipped the ring over my ring finger, pushed through the door, and ducked my head against the flurries of snow. I'd made the goddess wait long enough. Chapter 3. Opening the door to the rented office space Shukra and I shared, I almost kicked a streak of black fur as it darted around my ankles and disappeared down the stairwell.
Shu, keep the damn door closed!
I slammed the door to drive my point home.
I hate cats!
A headache was trying to hammer its way out of my skull through my eyeballs. My cheek was throbbing, probably from the tiny bits of glass I couldn't pick out, and I was still sore over the new claw marks in my coat. The cherry on top of my fantastic night would be the goddess waiting behind my closed office door.
Ace,
Shu said as she strode down the hall, hips swaying hypnotically like a cobra in a pantsuit. at once condemned her to hell. Her soul was the blackest I'd ever seen. She should have been devoured, and yet here she was, a blight on my life, striding toward me like she owned the goddamn place. Half owned it. My hatred for her burned as fiercely as it had on the day I'd weighed the light in her soul and found it lacking, and it was only matched by the vicious hatred she felt for me. We had that in common, at least.
"You're not gonna like it,"
she said, pulling up outside my office door. Her lips cut blood-red lines through her golden complexion. She still carried the darker skin tone of the East, even after all this time. She wore her oil-black hair up in a ponytail so tight it pulled her cheekbones up with it. I hadn't been lying about the woman with a tongue like a knife, or exaggerating. She had the kind of sultry good looks that lured men and women close so she could tear their hearts out and eat them while her victims died watching. Disgust and hatred had saved me that fate. "When have I ever liked anything you've said?" I told her, and reached for the office door. "This one, I've got this." I opened the door, and my guts fell through the floor. My bravado, the thumping pain in my head, and the sickening sense that the world wasn't done screwing with me, all came to a screeching halt. Never had a second dragged on for so long an eternity. Goddess Bastet, Queen of Cats, Warrior Bitch, and my ex-wife, was sitting in my chair. She'd propped her boots, buckled up to the knee on my desk, and was plucking at her elaborately painted nails with my decorative letter opener. In her hands, that letter opener was a deadly weapon. "Get out of my chair," I growled.
"Technically, the chair is half mine."
She spoke slowly, leisurely, taking her time, because she had immeasurable amounts of it. "Take the chair and get out." I even stepped aside and held the door open for her, like a gentleman. Shu stood down the hallway, glaring daggers.
"She's a client."
My headache was back and thumping down my neck. I should have stayed at Antonio's. "Conflict of interest," I blurted, scrambling for any excuse to be done with this day, my ex-wife, and Shu's eternally pissed-off expression.
"You were always interested in conflict before."
This came from the smooth lips of my ex-wife. She could sit there as calm and relaxed as she liked, but like any cat, she could go from tame to rabid if I glanced at her the wrong way. Closing my eyes, I pinched the bridge of my nose and counted to three. That was as far as I got before my chair creaked, drawing my eye back to Bast as she rose gracefully to her feet. She was tall and lean, and had a powerful gait, like the top cat cruising her territory. That's what had first caught my eye. After a few hundred years, I'd been looking for a challenge, and found it in her. She wore some kind of belted waistcoat, with an array of buckles and long fingerless gloves that ended at the elbow. Short black hair clung close to her cheeks, giving her a wild, foreboding flare, as though she'd sooner stab you as say hello. And yet her mouth was smooth, her lips soft, and her words like silk, and her touch. I told myself I was looking for weapons when I roamed my gaze up her thighs and over her hips. I knew every inch of her, and how she used it all.
"Shu?" I cleared my throat. "Give us a minute."
She was already halfway down the hall when she called back.
"Anything gets broken, it comes out of your paycheck."
I closed the door and pressed my back against it. Bast had taken up a spot leaning against my desk. She'd set the letter opener down beside her, still within reach. I didn't actually think she'd go to all the trouble of hiring me only to stab me, but jilted women did crazy things. Jilted goddesses were damn right psychotic. She blinked bottle-green cat-like eyes and clasped her hands loosely in front of her.
"Do I talk first?" I asked. "Or should we wait for the tension to kill me?"
"Someone is killing my blessed. I want you to find out who."
"Someone is killing cats?"
"No." Her eyes narrowed. "Were you even paying attention when we were married?"
All gods had obsessions, little quirks to get them through millennia of endless boredom. Her thing was cats. At once woken in her bed, surrounded by hundreds of felines. Or maybe it had been 30. 30 cats sure felt like 100 when they were watching you sleep. She was a cat, a big-ass jungle cat with claws like Jambia daggers, who liked to pretend she was a person. Or maybe it was the other way around. The lines had blurred. A lot had blurred in 20 years. I couldn't be expected to remember everything a goddess chose to bless. What the hell else could be blessed by Bastet? Warriors? Swords? Ninjas? I have no idea.
Pregnant women.
Right. That, of course. Pregnant women. Her mouth curled at one side, tucking into her cheek.
You haven't changed.
I had, just not recently. Shu will look into it.
No.
Bast. She lifted her head at my tone and fixed those penetrating green eyes on mine. I hesitated, my argument stalling. If I spent too long looking into her eyes, I'd see into her soul. I'd been down that road before. I no more wanted to see the truth than she wanted me to see it. Breaking the visual connection before the magic could take hold, I sauntered around my desk and dropped into my chair. My schedule is packed. I really don't have the time.
I saw. You must be keeping Antonio busy.
She'd been rooting through my desk. I made a mental note to yell at Shu later. Not that she could have stopped a goddess from helping herself to my office, but I could still lay into my business partner. It would make me feel better. Bast, you and me, we've been there. I rummaged around my top drawer, trying to look busy. She might get the point and leave. Let's not get tangled up again. Shu is better suited to...
Shukra is a condemned soul tied to you because Osiris has a twisted sense of humor.
Bast planted her hands on my desktop and leaned in, driving her glare down on me.
I will not entrust the lives of my blessed to a foul being who should have been devoured centuries ago.
I couldn't argue with her words, or with the venom in them, but working with Bast on something like this, I already knew where it was headed. We'd end up fighting, which was never a pretty sight. The guilt would pile on, and there might even be some sex in there somewhere. Angry sex, the toxic kind.
You're wearing our wedding band.
I looked at my hand, surprised to find the incriminating evidence right there on my finger. Damn, she was scrutinizing me again with those cat eyes.
You left me, remember?
Bast said. I remembered precisely how her knee had found my balls. You want the ring back? I gave the ring a twist, but it wasn't budging.
No, I want your help.
She straightened and seemed to grow 3 inches. When she spoke, her voice carried a compulsion. A decent one, too, and heavy enough to scratch at my mind.
Women in Queens are dying. Women blessed by me in my territory. My chosen. This is personal, and I don't trust anyone else to do what needs to be done.
Trust. We'd trusted each other once. Funny how that worked. Gods didn't trust easily, and especially not other gods. Her compulsion slid right off. She probably wasn't aware she'd cast it, seeing as trying to compel me to do anything was a waste of magic. The fact she had made that mistake told me how much this meant to her. She wouldn't have returned unless this was important. Her last words to me had been along the lines of, "If I see you again in 1,000 years, it'll be too soon." 20 years was a blink to her. Maybe if I took the job and we stayed out of each other's way, I could get this done. Business was slow. The gods and their minions were unusually quiet. I needed the cash, needed this job, just not the baggage that came with it.
"You have to help, Ace."
The softness in her voice did me in, and I was about to agree when she added,
"For our daughter."
What?
I didn't tell you because...
Wait! She waited. I opened my mouth, stalled, and closed my mouth. What? I could hear my heart pounding right alongside the throbbing in my head.
daughter?
Back up a second. She's 19 and pregnant.
A crazy little laugh slipped free.
No, no way. Not in 1,000 years would I believe.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?